99.5 FM, WBAI New York, and on the internet at WBAI.org. It's 5 o'clock. The program you just heard, Labrish with Haptah Selassie, will be back next week at 2, following the work of the Midnight Ravers. Stay tuned for Back of the Book. Coming your way right here.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of The Feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. Well, okay, okay, we went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
I'm pretty sure it's 5 a.m. on the last Saturday morning of winter. And you're listening to all. Welcome to Eric Adams' City of Dogs Spelled Backwards Radio, WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners wherever they may be.
And we're going to talk about various things in this program. You can find out a little bit more about them by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. When you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame on the left-hand side of your screen. At the top, it will say Latest Back of the Book Program Links. The WBAI website and archives seem to be working all right as we record this program. This is our 128th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we can't reference them on this program. A recorded program can't be as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. The top story in the multiverse and in the multiverse of multiverses is... We are holding at the huge number of 120 followers on Twitter, and everybody in gazillions of planets who have gotten this news are shocked at such a large number of followers. The next regular WBAI local station board meeting will be on Wednesday, April 12th, 2023 at 7 p.m. on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. And on the last program, we talked a little bit about it. And if you look at the webpage from the last program, you can read about it if you want. As we also noted on the last program, the Johns Hopkins website is no longer covering COVID-19. The CDC website is, in fact, continuing to monitor it in its own way. The CDC website said on Friday afternoon that in America, the number of reported cases as of Friday was 103,801,821, and the death toll in America was 1,121,512, with a death rate of 1,750 for the past week. although the CDC gives a death rate for the week of 1,706. So we have different numbers, but either way, we're down from last week's numbers. And it's possible that we just got to the CDC a little later this week than we did last week or something like that. Or I don't know what the hell happened. We'll see how this goes in the future. The pandemic is not over. Pickles of the North and I are still keeping our masks on. We've both gotten our bivalent vaccinations, and we are not among those who are saying that getting a COVID-19 infection is like getting a cold. By the time this program airs on Saturday morning, all of those figures we've quoted will be higher, of course. This was all mostly preventable. And we now have a new recent suggestion about where it came from. The Department of Energy had a low confidence determination that it had actually, that COVID-19, that the virus had actually leaked from the Wuhan laboratory. But this week, we are hearing that it's been found out that the Chinese folks, their version of the CDC, posted information that something called raccoon dogs had shown signs of the virus infection. Because what happened was, when all of this started, the animals were quickly cleared out of that market. There's something called a raccoon dog, which is sort of like a fox. And that was one of the many animals offered up for eating pleasure there. And they were cleared out along with everything else. But there was a posting online from the Chinese Communist Party's version of the CDC. And they said they scraped things and they tested things and they took samples all over the place from the cages. And they discovered that the virus was in this raccoon dog animal. And they say, yeah, that could be how it got transmitted to humans over there. And then it spread out from that. So now we have these two different versions of what happened. And who knows what to believe? Certainly the pandemic had its zero location in Wuhan, China. And so either way, it got out there, and we are all suffering for it to this day. We'll probably suffer for it in one way or another for the rest of our lives, but be glad we're not among the more than 6 million people in the world who've died from it. The Russian invasion of Ukraine continues. There's a huge fight going on around a place called Bakhmut. And, oh boy, the Russians are moving in and trying to surround it on all sides. The Ukrainians are defending themselves. This week, the International Court has declared that Vladimir Putin, dictator of Russia, is a war criminal, and they want him. They have issued a warrant for his arrest, and the major war crime that they're focusing on is the kidnapping of large numbers of Ukrainian children and shipping them off to Russia. And, oh boy, this is what's happening, obviously, is this is an old thing people did in the old world time and again. I mean, I think the Mongol Empire did this when it conquered places. I think the Romans did this. What you do is you go in and you kill people like crazy. You grab the kids. You grab the kids and you bring them back to your place. And you have your loyal subjects raise them as theirs. And then when the time comes in another 20 years or so, you send them back to their place of origin. Some of them back to their place of origin. And they basically are the face of it, and they are from that place. This is what was done by all these old empires, and Putin is following a playbook that is thousands of years old and barbaric and criminal. And so obviously the idea is, from the start, he'd said he wanted to replace the people in charge in Kyiv, and the idea here would be he would replace them with somebody temporarily, and then he would replace them with these people who would be brought up and totally propagandized and politicized in Russia as, oh, these are Ukrainians. These are the Ukrainian people. This is what they want. And so it's obviously a war crime. And, yeah, he'll probably never get arrested. Plus, I'm reading that, you know, the Ukrainians are very plucky and they're fighting and all of that. And they're running short on ammunition, I'm reading. There was a piece in the Washington Post about how the morale is kind of shot. And they're putting their new troops up at the front, and they're not exactly battle-tested. Somebody who's been in a war for 6 months, who's been in combat for 6 months, behaves very differently from a guy who's just come off the firing line and training. And so the guys who are new to it, they show up, and in some cases, they break and run when the enemy starts coming at them. And this is not good. This is not how you fight. And so they're having trouble with that. There's a morale problem for the whole army. A lot of the troops have been killed and wounded and can't fight anymore. So what was seen originally, the fact that Russia has a very big population, that's really telling now. And this is a problem. Plus, also, they're running out of ammunition and all of this. Poland is going to give them some old MiG fighters, which I don't know how useful that's going to be, because the Russians have the more modern MiG fighters and they can put them up and they're better planes and they can shoot down the Ukrainian planes that are the Russians' own planes from, you know, the Soviet Union time. So this is there's stuff going back and forth here, and it's really awful. I'm hoping, of course, that at some point the Russians get shoved out of Ukraine. Perhaps because of the timely passing of Vladimir Putin, war criminal, whatever. And, you know, that Ukraine can then become a nation state that is not being threatened like this anymore. So, oh boy, this is unfortunate stuff if the Ukrainians are getting that beaten up by the Russians. And, of course, the Russians have now decided they're going to go after American drones. And they're saying, oh, the American drone was in Russian space. You look at where it happened, and it's much, much closer to Turkey than it is to the Crimea. And of course, the Russians are lying, saying, oh, the drone just drove funny. However, the drone was transmitting its data. It's not like they, you know, put it on an SD card and leave it there to, you know, bring it back. They understand the idea something could happen to the drone. So it's in real time sending all the information back, which it has to do for people to pilot it, because they're piloted by pilots on the ground somewhere. And so the Pentagon has released the video of this, and you could see it doing exactly what had been said it was doing. The Russian planes are dropping their fuel on it. I guess it's their way of saying we're urinating on you. And then one of them bangs into its propeller, and you can see the propeller is banged up. One of the blades is just totally out, and I think a second blade maybe not really functional. It looks different. In any event, It also messed up the plane a little bit. And for this, the pilots were given medals. Oh, yeah. Got to get that propaganda in there. And so the Pentagon says they did, in fact, wipe out all data on it that the Russians could possibly use. And they then let it crash into the sea. And the Russians are now out there with ships trying to find it. Now, my understanding has been that if you have like a warship and it sinks, it's sovereign. You still own that. Is it not like that for military aircraft? I don't know, and especially military aircraft in international waters. I think the United States should be out there. Maybe a bunch of NATO ships should be out there looking. And if the Russians want to contest anything, maybe they should contest it. I mean, you can't let them push you around. Otherwise, you know, tomorrow they're trying to invade Alaska instead of Ukraine.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. He is R. Paul Martin, and I am Radio's Pickles of the North.
George Santos is continuing to keep himself before the public eye. Yeah, this past week, after having been accused of starting a credit card skimming scam with another guy, this week he has filed his papers to run for re-election in 2024. He said he was not going to run for re-election. Now he's filed to run for re-election. Is this a surprise? He lies about every other damn thing. Why wouldn't he lie about that? So, yeah, he's filed to run for re-election in 2024. I think that maybe he really isn't going to run. However, by filing, this allows him to take campaign contributions, money. And I think that clearly that's why he has filed this. This allows him to say, oh, send me money for a campaign contribution. And owing to bizarre laws in America, you get to keep the money from campaign contributions if you end up not running. Or you can just use that to say, well, I'm contemplating running for president or something, you know, or dog catcher. And I'm going to use this money for that. And in order to run for president or dog catcher, you buy yourself a brand new car, as they would say in the Price is Right. And, you know, things like that. There are notorious ways of manipulating campaign contributions that politicians have come up with over the past century and a half. And, of course, they have made that all legal since they passed the laws. Hey, let's pass a law that says we can do any goddamn thing we want with this money. Oh, that sounds like a good idea. I'll pass it if you'll pass it. Yeah, let's both pass it. Boink. Scratch this back and I'll scratch that back. And here's the money and we'll walk away with bulging pockets. And who gives a rat's ass about those citizens? Yeah, so this is what's going on with Congress Critter Santos. Daylight saving time is back. Whoopee, whoopee. I'm enjoying it already. The sun is setting after 7 o'clock in the evening, which is what I like. And on Monday, this coming Monday, March 20th at 5:24 p.m. Eastern Time, spring will arrive. Yes, the vernal equinox will happen. The sun will appear to be directly overhead for folks who are hanging out on the equator. Whoopee! Oh, I'm very glad that we're going to get spring here and things will start to look better. It'll warm up, although it hasn't gotten that cold this winter. And, oh boy, this is some stuff here, folks. Daylight saving time and spring coming within days of each other. I think I'm going to feel better. Hell, I might even go out sometime this spring. It's St. Patrick's Day as we record this program. This St. Patrick character, he wasn't even Irish. He was also never canonized, by the way. On the other hand, they say, well, they called him a saint. This is before the Catholic Church formalized how he became a saint. Yeah, okay, sure. He never became canonized. That's how you become a saint. You're canonized a saint. That's, you know. So they just, oh, hey, he's a saint. Well, some guys said that, you know, some barefoot guys standing in a bog.
It would have been much more interesting if they actually shot him out of a cannon.
Yes.
You're canonized! Woohoo!
Boom. Anyway, this guy was a Roman missionary sent to make the Irish vassals of the then deteriorating, but Roman Catholic, Western Roman Empire. And so he went there and, you know, it was in that century, the 5th century of the current era, that Rome fell. In August 476 of the current era, that's the official date of Rome is gone, guys. It's over. No more Rome, okay? And that's what happened there. And not too far from that point in time was this St. Patrick character showing up to make everybody say, oh, we're going to be Catholic and we'll do what they say in Rome, because the Pope had secular power, big secular power in those days. And that's a part of what was going on. The Catholic Church was building a real empire. And so, you know, the Roman Empire was falling apart, but they were still building an empire at that point in time. In fact, at that time, they even had the Eastern Roman Empire. It hadn't broken off yet. The schism happens in 1054, so they had quite a lot of time. They had 600 years to you know, mess around with basically what they considered then to be the whole world. But this St. Patrick's guy got sent there, and yeah, he just made them vassals of Rome. And and you should also give money that we can send to Rome. Oh yeah, the Pope ain't got enough money over there. Let's send the Pope some more money. And that's what they did. So that's what St. Patrick did. He was not good for Ireland.
Mark Paul, when you were a little boy, was St. Patrick's Day a day of holy obligation?
It absolutely was. In fact, we'd be home and we'd watch it on TV, and we'd say, oh, look at that, because I was brought up Roman Catholic. And one of the things that was on the agenda was that in high school, in my high school, certain high schools, certain Catholic high schools, your senior year, the seniors got to march in the St. Patrick's Day parade in Manhattan. And so I went to St. Francis Prep, which was an all-boys school in those days, which in those days I very much preferred. And so we, in there, we were able to have people marching every St. Patrick's Day. And when I got into high school, we would watch it on TV and say, oh, there's St. Francis Prep, and I know this guy and that guy and all of this. Well, some people were looking forward to marching in the 1965 St. Patrick's Day parade. I was a senior in high school in 1965, and so a lot of people were looking forward to it. Never happened. Why? Well, in the 1964 St. Patrick's Day parade, the senior class, at least a good portion of the senior class from St. Francis Preparatory School, showed up drunk as skunks. And they behaved like a bunch of rowdy drunks. They were terrible. They were staggering around. They were yelling at people. I think there was some urination happening in public. And, oh, various things were going on that, I think the word disgraceful was used. And so the people who ran in those days, the St. Patrick's Day March, said, St. Francis Prep, because of that, for punishment, your seniors don't march in the march anymore. I don't know how long that lasted for, because after the senior year, I didn't have any contact with the school anymore. Some people did have contact with the school afterwards. Some people just kept up relationships with their grammar school and their high school. I never did that. Partly because we moved to another part of Brooklyn, partly because I didn't see the other kids I knew anymore, therefore. And, you know, it was just like that. Partly also because I was starting to sort of get to be not all that devout a Roman Catholic. And so I don't know what happened, but I do know that in 1965 we were banned because of what the 1964 seniors had done. And oh boy, that was quite something in the school. The brothers were really PO'd about that. And oh, it was a great stain upon the reputation of St. Francis Prep.
Well, round about the same time was my only time that I was in the St. Patrick's Parade in Montreal, which has been going on for quite some time. Not as long as the one here in New York City, but it's been a long time. And I got to sit on a float with my friend Nancy. They dressed us up. We were so bundled. It was so cold. I can't tell you how cold it was because March in Montreal, it's cool. It can be cold there. And, you know, this was before climate change really got rolling. And we sat on the float and there was this big golden harp between us, you know, because the parish had gone, you know, all out to build this float. My father was one of the ones building the float, using the foil and everything. And Nancy and I sat there and we had on the, over our big winter coats, we had this like white robe, and then we had a little shamrock hat that my grandmother had made. She actually made them for me for tap dancing class. A tap, a tap, a tap. Oh, yes, the little Irish, the Canadian Irish costume. So we both had our shamrock hats on and our mittens, and we're waving at everybody. And memory may fail me, but I believe at the time women were not permitted to march actually in it. You had a queen and her princesses that were on like a little float and they could ride along. And so this is how they got us in to it. We were sitting on, we weren't marching. We were little girls on a float. But oh, and my parents, when I got old enough to run for, I forget what it's, I guess it's queen. Your queen, the Irish queen of the parade with the princesses. I think it was the United Irish Societies that did all this stuff.
And you see, they wouldn't let me run for queen of the Irish thing.
They wouldn't. My parents were not happy when I came of age that I refused to have anything to do with it. Like, their daughter who, well, I mean, I could count on the fingers of both hands the times I wore dresses. I was supposed to put on a gown and makeup and go and get my hair coiffed and then go to these things. Oh, man. It was like I told them, you know, that's a non-starter, right? I'm not going to do that. Oh, they were not happy. What a disappointment.
Memories of St. Patrick's Day's past. New York City Mayor Eric Adams is really foisting his superstitious beliefs on the rest of New York City. This past week, he said he wants to transform New York City into, quote, a place of God, unquote. At some event full of sky pilots, Adams said, quote, how do we take a city that is the center of the power of America and turn it into a city when you enter it, everyone sees faith and sees God, unquote. Maybe by forcing hallucinogenic drugs on everyone? Would that work? Is that what he wants? Apparently, he does not understand what his job is. It's to solve problems and have the city work, not to spread superstition all over the goddamn place. Mayor Adams went on to say, quote, our challenge is not economics. Our challenge is not finance. Our challenge is faith. People have lost their faith, unquote. Jesus Christ, what a jerk. Yeah, our challenge is economics. What do you think is going on here? All sorts of economics. People who can't afford things and people who are so wealthy they're screwing up the city terribly. All of that is going on. That's economics. That's finances. We don't have enough money to do various things. The transit fares are going up. Jesus Christ, Adams, get a grip. So economics is not something he's going to deal with. He's going to pray the city's problems away, I suppose. He had previously said that he doesn't believe in the separation of church and state. Gee, that's nice. Welcome to America, Eric Adams. At a gun violence summit hosted by even more sky pilots. Sky pilot is a reference to various types of clerical people. It's initially referred to chaplains in the army. And yes, we called them that in the army. And so sky pilot, it is not a term of endearment. In fact, was it the Animals?
Sky Pilot.
Yeah, they had a whole long song called Sky Pilot. If you find it, listen to that sometime. It's a long song, and Jesus Christ, it indicates that Sky Pilot is not a complimentary term, which is the way I use it. Anyway, so, yeah, faith is the thing. So economics is something he's not going to deal with. He's going to pray the city's problems away. He had previously said that he doesn't believe in the separation of church and state. Anyway, at that gun violence summit hosted by the other Sky Pilots, he called on them to be part of a, quote, major recruitment campaign, unquote, to get young people to become police officers. Yeah, we need more superstition and superstition-based bias on the police force. Adams had been putting various anti-gay bigots in city positions during his term in office, and all of them had some sort of connection to some, you know, religion or another. And he sees nothing wrong with that. He keeps doing it. And before the St. Patrick's Day parade, he said that people who object to his pushing his religion on everyone, that they should get over it. Wow. This week, he also said, quote, when people walk into this city, when they get off the bus, when the asylum seekers come in, when they enter the city for the first time at JFK or Amtrak, do they feel God, unquote? What a schmuck. Jesus Christ, he's even worse than I'd thought before. I hadn't, as an administrator, he stinks. But with this stuff, he's really, really awful, foisting this religious crap on all of us.
Well, the other thing that he said over the past couple of weeks, at a breakfast full of Sky Pilots, as you say, was that he feels he's been appointed by God.
Oh, yeah, that too.
To be mayor. Now, you may have thought that mayors get elected in New York City. Apparently, this is not so. I don't know if Gabriel came down and pointed to him and said, you, Eric Adams, shall be mayor of New York City.
But which god would have done that? We don't know. There are so many gods. You know, it might be, you know, could have been Beelzebub. That's a god to some people. You're the god, you know, and he's got all the flies around him and all that.
No, I was reading up on the church he was raised in, and he is apparently speaking truth to what he believes in, which, of course, when you're a politician, you should not do, because when you get elected, you're not just having people from your faith who elect you. You're having all different kinds of people who elect you in this case. I guess there wasn't a whole big choice, because, man.
I hope he's a one-term mayor, because we can't have this kind of crap going on. He's going to do worse and worse things, and well, he already is.
He's going to do them in the name of the Lord, too, which is...
Yeah. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. And you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. NASA's Next Generation Space Telescope, which is named after an anti-gay bigot, has found an interesting star in its Wolf-Rayet phase. Wolf-Rayet stars are named after the French astronomers Charles Wolf and Georges Rayet, who first discovered the first Wolf-Rayet star in 1867. These Wolf-Rayet stars are special because they always start out as large stars and then shed a great deal of their mass and dust before going supernova. The star Wolf-Rayet 124 in the constellation Sagitta has already blown off its outer layers, and the space telescope, which can see in the infrared, is very well adapted to look at this particular star because it's surrounded by a lot of dust, because that's what a Wolf-Rayet star does. It blasts out gigantic amounts of dust and an optical telescope sees the dust and can't see anything inside that cloud of dust. However, at the infrared ranges, you see right through the dust. You can see the dust, but you also see right through it to what's inside the dust cloud where the star is. And so the folks at NASA say that this one star, WR124, is 30 times the mass of the sun and has already shed 10 suns worth of material. Think about that. And the sun is a lot bigger than the Earth. In fact, the sun is, 98 or 99% of the whole solar system is the sun. And this star has blown out 10 times the mass. So basically, it's blown out about 10 solar systems worth of stuff in the form of dust. And, oh, man. So these are just figures of things that are just beyond human comprehension. Jesus Christ. Anyway, so that's blown out all of that material. And scientists figure that the star is about to go supernova pretty soon, because that's what happens with these Wolf-Rayet stars. They're always big, and they're big enough that they are going to go supernova. At a certain size, a star has to go supernova late in its life. There's no way around it. A big star burns up its hydrogen fuel very fast, goes through a few more phases, and makes more elements. And yeah, the original one with hydrogen makes helium, and it goes on and on and on. There's a whole list. Eventually, it gets around to making iron. But iron is different because when it makes iron, it costs energy. It doesn't release energy. And so it implodes. It implodes at an enormous speed, and it just travels right in there. And something that's 30 times the size of the mass of the sun, that's going to become a black hole when it blows. And in the process of becoming a black hole, it's going to be supernova, which is a very bright thing. And, of course, this star, WR124, is 15,000 light years away, so it most likely has already gone supernova a while ago. However, since we're 15,000 miles away, we may finally see a Type 2 supernova after waiting around for one for more than 400 years. And so this will be very interesting. And also, in that same constellation, Sagitta, V Sagittae is what's called a cataclysmic variable, a binary star system composed of a white dwarf star accreting mass off a donor star. And they form a binary, and the heavy gravity of the white dwarf star steals material from the other star. I don't know if it's a normal star, a big star, a small star. It's another star, and it's going to be donating material to the white dwarf star. And it's accreting that material, and it's expected to go nova and briefly become the most luminous star in the Milky Way, and one of the brightest stars in our sky around the year 2083. So they can time that. The thing is that with a type 1A supernova, which is what happens when a white dwarf accretes enough mass, once the white dwarf suddenly weighs 1.4 times the mass of the sun, that's enough mass so that what's at the center of the white dwarf, which is carbon, can now be fused. But when that gets fused, it releases a whole lot of energy. The white dwarf, even being so very heavy as it is, isn't enough to contain that. And you get, instead of an ordinary fusion where it's burning something, you get what's called carbon detonation. And it blows up to a type 1A supernova. And so that's what's going to happen with that star. This other star, WR124, the Wolf-Rayet star, that's going to blow as a core collapse supernova, a type 2 supernova, and that'll be spectacular, and who knows when it's going to blow. This other one is going to blow in around 2083. Is this one going to wait that long, too? Is the Wolf Rayet star going to wait that long, or is it about to go off any minute now? We don't know, but we may get to see a supernova in our lifetimes. The last supernova seen on Earth that wasn't in another galaxy, and you had to use big telescopes to see it, was Kepler's supernova, which blew up in 1604, just a couple of years before astronomical telescopes got invented. So Galileo would have been able to see something really interesting, but unfortunately, he didn't get the telescope going till like 5 years after Kepler's star blew. Oh, well, scientists have been wanting to see a nearby supernova for just hundreds of years now, and who knows, maybe they'll get to do that sometime soon. This is Women's History Month, and WBAI does a whole month about women's history stuff, and so we're going to be doing that and pitching because we need to raise money. We need to seriously raise money. And so we're going to offer a whole bunch of things here. And let's hear first a little piece here about Shirley Chisholm.
You're tuned to listener-sponsored WBAI in New York with a moment in women's history. Shirley Chisholm was the first black woman in Congress, and in 1972, she became the first woman and first black American to seek the nomination for President of the United States from one of the two major parties.
I am a woman with ability, with intelligence, and with depth. That is the sadness about this country. And that's why I made my mind up. I was going to stay in this race, come thick or thin. And I was going to go all the way to Miami, because even though the papers have been underscoring me, even though many people have been saying, well, she can't be serious, they're going to see me in action at the National Convention. And I mean this. I am committed to this as an instrument of people in this country who've been left out, an instrument of people whose counsel and advice has never been sought. In terms of putting a ticket together, only using the people every 4 years for their votes. I look at all of these distinguished senators telling all of the people what they're going to do for women, what they're going to do for blacks, what they're going to do for Chicanos, what they're going to do for this group and the other group. Well, darn it, they've been in the United States Senate for 10 or more years. If they had a concern about the American Indian, they would have done something already about the miserable living conditions that those Indians live on in terms of the reservations, where 70% of them don't live to see the age of 40. They don't have a concern about women. They don't have a concern about the conservation and preservation of human resources. They're only interested in these human resources every 4 years when it's time to go out and get the vote. And that's why when people say, well, what makes you so different from all the rest of them? I said, I am different because I have a gut commitment to people, first of all. All of the rest of them have commitment to different interest groups, financial groups, power groups. I'm espoused only by a lot of folks in the country who told me they didn't want to vote between the lesser of the two evils anymore. They wanted to give their vote to somebody that they knew deep down within themselves had a commitment to people, and for whatever that vote would mean, at least it would give me that much more added strength that I need when I get to the convention.
Chisholm retired from Congress after serving seven terms. In 1983, she said she wanted to be remembered as a woman who dared to be a catalyst for change. You can receive our Women's History audio collection with Shirley Chisholm and other trailblazers by becoming a WBAI buddy, a sustaining member for $15 a month. You'll also receive our fabulous tote bag. Please go to women.wbai.org. Again, that's women.wbai.org to become a buddy in the name of your favorite program. Or call 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950, and say, yes, certainly, I want to become a WBAI buddy this Women's History Month.
And I will also note that Shirley Chisholm was an early supporter of the gay rights bill that we brought up, that the Gay Activist Alliance brought up more than 50 years ago. And I recently saw something about somebody who claims to have written the bill. I know who wrote the bill. And Anyway, so, yeah, she was a supporter of that when it wasn't the most popular thing, and it got voted down a number of times. In fact, we had to have big fights to have hearings for it, and I remember that. But she was in favor of it. Others were not. And, you know, so we have this Women's History Month pitching going on. We need to raise a pile of money. And so we have been informed by management that BAI buddies now have a minimum of $10. So generally, we can pitch here for somebody to become a BAI buddy for $10 or $15 or $20 or more. If you become, and with that, you get a BAI tote bag, and you become a BAI buddy. And a BAI buddy is the name we have for our sustaining membership here. What it means is, on a monthly basis, you'll donate that amount of money to BAI. You do that by calling 1-212-209-2950 and saying you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And what you do is you call them up, you call the call center up, and you tell them you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book, and you get a tote bag when you become a BAI buddy, and there may be some stuff in the bag. We don't know. And basically, for Women's History Month, we have a special offering. If you become a $15 a month BAI buddy, or if you donate $100 in a one-time contribution, you'll receive an 8-gigabyte USB flash drive containing 79 hours of audio from Pacifica's Women's History Collection. When you call up the call center at 1-212-209-2950, ask for the Women's History Collection. And again, if you're going to become a BAI buddy, you have to do $15 a month to get the Women's History Collection. Unless you want to just donate a one-time $100 donation, which we gladly accept, and then you'll also get it. Again, it's the Women's History Collection. You heard a tiny bit of that just now. And we need to raise the money. I mean, we're behind on the tower rent. We're behind on the rent to the studios. And we're also behind on the call center, which is what you're going to be calling. And so they got to really get the call center paid off, because otherwise we can't raise money for anything else. So 1-212-209-2950. Again, the BAI Buddy is a regular sustaining membership, which means you call up 1-212-209-2950. You say you want to become a BAI Buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And then you give them your credit card or debit card number, and you tell them how much you'd like to donate. It can be $10, the new minimum, $15, $20 more if you want. And then you tell them what day of the month you want your credit card or debit card charged. And they will do that for you. So what happens is you call up that number, 1-212-209-2950, and you say you want to become a BAI buddy. Now, management has put out something that says, as of now, we see that out of over 100 programs, 31 have no buddies, and 21 have only one buddy. We need to step up the number of buddies to safeguard programs we have now on air, unquote. This week, we found out that we have 3 BAI buddies on Back of the Book. Thank you to the BAI buddies. We have 3 BAI buddies. Also, thanks to the one-time donors we know we have, and you're all helping us. You're helping us to stay on the air and helping BAI to exist. If you're not a donor or a buddy right now, would you please become one? Again, if you just want to become a BAI buddy, it's 1-212-209-2950. Say you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book, and tell them you want to donate $10 a month, $15 a month, $20 a month or more. And also tell them if you want to get that Women's History Collection, you got to tell them you want to pledge for the Women's History Collection. And that's that 8 gigabyte flash drive with all this stuff on it. And you plug that into a computer or some other things and you can listen to 79 hours of this stuff. And so, yes, 1-212-209-2950. And it's $15 a month or more if you want the Women's History Collection. And it, again, also a one-time donation of $100 gets you the Women's History Collection. 1-212-209-2950. That's the number to call right now, and we need to hear from you.
Arpa, why don't we hear a little more from that vast collection full of women and history?
You're tuned to listener-sponsored WBAI New York with A Moment in Women's History.
I certainly couldn't become a part of the Hollywood white group. I was never allowed to act, really, with another white person in a scene. I was pinned to the pillar so I could be cut out of the scene if it went to places in the South where it couldn't be shown.
Lena Horne, actress, singer, dancer, and civil rights activist, worked at the Cotton Club on Lenox Avenue in the 1930s.
That was the place that was the showcase for Negro talent. And one had to have some place to show one's creativity. Duke Ellington, Cab Calloway, the great Ethel Waters. Negro people finally who worked under a roof in a cabaret that was a little better than a basement downstairs somewhere, and not a tent show in the South. But on the other hand, I was torn because it was a dreadful place with bad working conditions, little money, no respect paid to its creative people, and our own people couldn't come and see us perform. One didn't say too much about it because one then would get all the men fired who were waiters there, and one would get all the girls fired who took care of their families by working there.
Horne says the Cotton Club was a trap. She later performed at the March on Washington on behalf of the NAACP and SNCC. Her career was sidelined for a while by the Hollywood blacklist. She was trailed by the FBI for decades. A memo in Horne's FBI file in 1948 says she's sympathetic to the communist cause and is extremely race conscious. You can receive our extensive Women's History audio collection with Lena Horne and some of her music and other trailblazers by becoming a WBAI buddy, a sustaining member for $15 or more a month. You'll also receive WBAI's fabulous tote bag. Please go to women.wbai.org. Again, that's women.wbai.org to become a WBAI buddy in the name of your favorite radio program or in the name of all WBAI radio shows, which many people have been doing. Call 212-209-2950. That's another way that you can become a WBAI buddy. 212-209-2950. And say, yes, I want to become a WBAI buddy on this Women's History Day. Thank you.
Again, BAI needs to pay a lot of bills. We are behind on everything, and we need you. You, the listener. You listen to this program. You listen to maybe other programs on BAI. We're really in financial deep stuff. And if we don't make some more money, we are not going to be on the air. The people at the tower, that's four Times Square, where the transmitter and antenna are, they are a bit PO'd at us because we don't pay on time. What we do is we get 3 months behind and then we pay on like the very last day of the month so that we're then 2 months behind and then the next day we're 3 months behind again. So this is what management has been doing managing this money? Because we don't have the money. We get down to like $1,000 in the bank account, and we have like $17,000 a month for the tower rent. It's, I think, $5,300 a month for the studio rent. We owe the call center thousands. So we got to get this. Plus, of course, we have to make payroll. Before any of that, we have to make payroll twice a month. And that's the most important thing, legally even. 1-212-209-2950. And call them up, say you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. You can pledge to, on a monthly basis, donate $10, $15, or $20 a month, or more if you want, and tell them you want to do it in the name of Back of the Book. Also, if you want to get that big 8-gigabyte USB flash drive with 79 hours of audio from Pacifica's Women's History Collection, still call up 1-212-209-2950. Tell them you want the Women's History Collection, and you'll tell them you want to become a BAI buddy for $15 a month, or more than $15 a month if you want. Or you can say, I want to do a one-time donation of $100 to get the Women's History Collection, and they will do that for you. 1-212-209-2950. Please, please call them up at that number now. We need to hear from you. That's been it for Back of the Book for this week. Coming up next is
Ecologic with Ken Gale, Donna Stein, and Sally Gellert.
Okay, spring is going to be here on Monday afternoon. Go out and enjoy it, or just look out the window and enjoy it. And the sun is setting after 7 o'clock in the evening. And above all, remember what that reveling in spring and watching out for a supernova dormouse said.
WBAI Community Advisory Board meeting is on Sunday, March 19th at 1 p.m. And you are invited to attend. The CAB, or CAB, is an advisory board which reviews programming and other station policies. It represents the diverse views and interests of the communities WBAI serves. If you want to attend the meeting, you can join by teleconference at 619-309-1058. And the PIN number is 641-711. Everyone is invited to call in and join the meeting, and we're happy that more people are now attending CAB meetings. Once again, the call-in number is 619-309-1058, and the PIN number 641-711. We hope that you'll be able to attend. That's the Community Advisory Board meeting, WBAI, March 19th, Sunday, 1 p.m.
WBAI's next town hall, Effective Directing of Resources for Good Influence, will be Sunday, March 26th at 4 p.m. A candidate is running for office. Do you donate to their campaign? Maybe. If it qualifies them to get into debates where they are going to force discussion of certain issues. In a flood of emails, you are asked to donate, again, to a political party. Do you do it? And have your money be the tail on a dog funded by lots of mega corporations? Where do you put your money to influence the world for the better? What about sending some of your money and resources to WBAI and Pacifica for the influence it can have on the world? Next question. When resources come in to WBAI and Pacifica, how can they best be directed within the Pacifica environment? To improve programming, attracting audiences, or to promote good shows already here? This is what's up for discussion. Give us your thoughts. Zoom in by computer or by Zoom. Go to WBAI's Town Hall webpage for the Zoom link information and phone number sign-in information.
Hello. This is Mike Pinder, co-founder of the Moody Blues.